You're listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
If you're objecting to a building development, what would you think if your arguments were entirely sidelined? That's what it looked like to the claimants in the case of Hoban Studios and the London Borough of Hackney. They challenged the grant of planning permission by the council for the redevelopment of Eagle Wharf in Regent's Canal. Charlotte Gilmartin is here to unpack some of the detail. Charlotte, can you fill us in on the background to this case?
Yes, the circumstances of the case was a challenge to the council's failure to carry out a re-consultation process before granting planning permission. So this was a failure to reconsult after amendments had been made to an application which was already present. So there were two main issues. The first was the circumstances in which an application for planning permission can be amended without notification of that amendment to others. And the second was what kind of test a reviewing court should apply when reviewing the legality of such an amendment.
Just before we get into the legality of it, what was the character of the site that was identified for development, both now and in the past?
The proposal was for the redevelopment of a number of industrial buildings on Eagle Wharf, and that's situated on Regent's Canal in Hackney. It's a listed area of local architectural and historic interest, and it's within the Regent's Canal conservation area. It's got quite an interesting history. It was the site of the Regent's Canal iron foundry, and that was set up by Henry Grissel in the 1840s. And it supplied structural and ornamental ironworks, which he used in a number of prominent buildings in London. So, for example, he made the iron which was used in the gates outside Buckingham Palace. But since the 1990s, most of the premises have been refurbished. And they've been used as a photographic and film studio, including by one of the two claimants in this case, who are called Hoban Studios. And it's now, in effect, the largest photographic studio complex in Europe. The proposal was for permission for partial demolition of this site and for full planning permission for a redevelopment. And that included a mixture of residential and commercial uses and a special affordable housing proposal. And the plans were in part specifically designed to accommodate the business needs of the photographic studios, which are situated on the wharf.
You've explained what this particular application for planning was, and it was a major development. What, in the objectors' views, that is the claimants in this case, went wrong with the application?
Well, the initial application in this case was submitted in 2015. And there was a statutory consultation period, and during that period site notices were displayed. And there was also a press advert which was published, and letters were sent to quite a few of the neighbouring properties, I think it was 368. And quite a few letters of objection were received, so there was 132 in the end, including from both the claimants. And their objections were really on the grounds that the development plans were inadequate to preserve the character of the local area, including in particular the business needs of the photographic studios. And then after the statutory consultation period had ended, so after all these objections had come in, amendments were then made to the proposal. And this happened in quite a few rounds, but the most significant amendments for the purposes of this judicial review were made in 2016. And these included changes to the proportions of some of the buildings, some changes to their external appearances, and quite significantly, the deletion of all the affordable housing which had been proposed in the initial application. Now, the revised application contained a certificate stating that Hoban Studios had been notified of these changes, when in fact that was false. And the judge found that there had been no attempt made to make any advertisements of the amendments, and it didn't seem to have even occurred to the council that such a reconsultation would even need to be made.
I think just before we go on with this particular case, let's just step back a moment and have a look at the constituent elements of a claim for judicial review in planning and which ones are relevant here.
Yes, so in general terms, there are several different grounds of judicial review which a claimant who believes a public authority has acted unlawfully would be able to bring. Usually one would bring a claim for judicial review on the basis that a public authority has either acted contrary to the terms of the power which was granted to it in the statute, or acted contrary to a requirement of procedural fairness. So, for example, if it's failed to hold a consultation process, as was relevant in this case, or finally on the basis that it's acted unreasonably in making the decision which it's gone on to make. And the role of the court in reviewing that process is slightly different depending on the claim that's been made. For example, if someone's claiming that a public authority has acted unreasonably, a court will generally only interfere with that judgment where it's a truly extreme example of unreasonable behaviour. Various phrases are used, but usually it's where it's manifestly unreasonable or irrational. And a court will typically defer to the judgment of a public authority as it considers that it's better equipped to answer those types of questions. But on questions of unlawfulness and questions of procedural unfairness, the court might take a more muscular approach to review. It's probably easier for a court to say with confidence that a public authority, for example, failed to hold a consultation procedure when it was required to do so. And it's much easier to do that than to say that it acted unreasonably in deciding to grant an application for planning permission. So in this case, the claimants principally brought their application on the basis that the council had acted unreasonably and unfairly in failing to notify them of the amendments. So it was essentially a challenge to the procedure which was adopted by the council and alleging that there was a duty to reconsult, which the council failed to do.
We're talking about the duty to consult, generally speaking, and also consult on amendments to planning permission. But who is it exactly that the authority tasked with deciding to give planning permission must consult in a case like this?
As a matter of statute, because this was a major development within environmental law terms, there are some specific requirements under the statutory order to publicise a development plan, and that includes publishing it in site displays or in a local newspaper. So in effect, the public would have known about the development. And there's also an obligation to notify the owner of property and interested parties. But in this case, there's also a sort of a common law or procedural right to fairness. And because objections have been made in the initial consultation procedure, the obligation to reconsult then applied to those parties.
Presumably there are different public interests that pull in different directions. As the judge himself said, the body considering an application for planning permission can't be too constrained by the common law or indeed statute.
Yes, and it's for that reason that the judge makes this distinction between a procedural and substantive obligation. So in terms of the substantive constraints on whether a public authority can grant an amended application or grant permission to an amended application, the court will only interfere with that assessment where it was manifestly unreasonable. But where it's a question of procedural fairness, the court can interfere with the judgment made by a public authority not to reconsult simply where it was unfair of it not to do so, and that's an assessment which will be made by the court. That means that the public authority still has discretion as to the judgment to be made as to whether to grant planning permission, but in the procedure in coming to that decision, the court will be much more active in policing the public authority's role.
We have to ask the question, would the reconsultation of the claimants in fact made any difference to the final permission?
So the reason the local authority planning officers hadn't held a reconsultation process was essentially because they thought the changes were positive and that they wouldn't cause any significant adverse impact, so there would be no need to reconsult. But the judge is much more sceptical as to whether the objections which might have been made would have made a difference. Essentially, he says that it shouldn't be the court's role to second guess whether that would have made a difference at all, and that's a question of judgment for the planning authority. So on that basis, since there was a possibility that they might have made a difference and that in his view it was unfair to deprive them of the opportunity to make the representations in any event, it essentially didn't really matter whether it would have made a difference or not. The important point was that the council had acted unfairly in failing to reconsult.
And presumably the duty to reconsult in this and any other case is for better public decision making generally, isn't it?
Yes, it should lead to better decision making, and it also has the impact that the local public and people who will be affected by planning permission applications can make their representations known, and it allows for a more collaborative process between interested parties and the planning authority.
Just to tie the loose ends up, Charlotte, does the outcome of this judicial review application have any implications for the way planning authorities go about their decision making? Are we looking at this case as a sort of key to the way things are going to happen in the future?
Yes, I think the implications could be very substantial for public authorities. And the reason for that is that the judge doesn't really appear to tie this obligation to reconsult to the scale or significance of the proposed amendments. So it's a procedural obligation which appears to be triggered in any event on the receipt of any kind of amendment to an application. Doesn't matter how insignificant it is, there could still be an obligation to reconsult. And this will inevitably be quite time-consuming and costly. One can imagine the number of members of the public who might want to make representations. And the breadth of the test as it's formulated by the judge could therefore be quite burdensome for public authorities. It's worth remembering that they're already very sensitive to time pressures, and there's an inevitable cost and administrative burden of instituting these types of reconsultation procedures. It's also significant that it's typically been very difficult to challenge the exercise of judgment by a local authority as to the virtue of a particular planning development. So it may be that public authorities aren't expecting to have this kind of burden imposed on them. So my assessment is that they'll really need to be alive to the need to consider whether they need to reconsult and whether a court would consider it unfair of them not to do so.
So like a lot of these things, it's public authorities look sharp. Otherwise, claimants will have a pretty good chance of getting the court's sympathy in respect of their decision making.
Yes, I think that's the conclusion we can draw from this case.
Good. Well, thank you very much for coming on the podcast to discuss this case with us and its possible implications.
No, thank you very much for having me.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.